Tristan, over to you.
Okay, did you want to start recording, James, or?
I am recording at the minute.
Yeah, everything's recording.
And I'll trim it down at the end. Yeah, so over to you, Tristan.
Okay, morning, everybody. So, thank you for the introduction, James. We worked together previously in the research department at Cambridge University. So I'm an academic radiologist. Half my time is clinical reporting, half is research. On the clinical side, I do general body imaging, but particularly uroradiology. So kidneys, bladder, testes, prostate, adrenals, ureters. And on the research side, I mainly concentrate on prostate cancer imaging research. So it's a bigger and bigger topic on the clinical side, prostate MRI. So I'll touch on how we change the pathway in the way we work up patients diagnostically with suspected prostate cancer, and issues of image quality, which is the hot topic really in the field at the moment. And then I'll come on to perhaps some research areas and what the issues are really with research and what the barriers are or what the line of sight needs to be. So a little bit of background first. So prostate cancer is a very common disease. It's the second commonest cancer within men, and there's around 50,000 cases a year, although less deaths than that. So it's still true of what the people learn when they're at medical school, or you probably know even if you're not a medic, that more people die with prostate cancer than because of prostate cancer. So the challenge really is to identify the significant disease and so-called tigers and differentiate them from the pussycats, the indolent tumors that we don't want to treat, because the treatments come with significant side effects. And actually, the incidence is going to be increasing with the aging population. So it's predicted to double in the next sort of 15 to 20 years, if you believe some of the forecasts. Certainly the incidence is going up. And clearly that means that we are dealing with a lot of patients a year with suspected prostate cancer. So there's around 120,000 per year that are referred into the urology clinics. And with the updates of the NICE guidelines from 2019, the majority of those will qualify for MR as the first diagnostic step. So that's a big burden on our departments. But what that also means is, because of that high prevalence and that high throughput of needed to scan patients, this can't just be the reserve of specialist centers, tertiary referral centers, in terms of scanning the patients and reporting them. So you do need to scan these patients in larger district general hospitals and smaller district general hospitals, and they'll have to be reported by radiologists in those centers as well. That's what I said. So MR is now the first diagnostic step, and particularly for lesion detection. Previously, we used MR for staging after a cancer was proven by biopsy, but that's also still a key role. So we do need to still think about staging of the gland. And actually, that's something that possibly gets missed and forgotten about when we're first looking at the MR. And sometimes it is affected by the grade of the tumor. So if the biopsy comes back as a higher grade, then actually, if a borderline case, we might start to think that it's going outside the gland. So that would be stage T3A when it's going outside the gland, T3B is when it's going into the seminal vesicles. So actually what we're starting to do increasingly is having to effectively re-report the MR. It's not quite as in detail as that, but we are getting these patients to be discussed in the MDT after the biopsy has been performed, and revisiting that aspect of the examination, the staging of the exam. So I'll give you a very brief primer on what is multiparametric MRI. So I'm sure the audience will be familiar. It's just a posh way of saying doing more than one sequence. So what are the sequences that we use? So MPMRI is the anatomical sequences plus our functional sequences. So when it comes to prostate, T2 in the axial plane is our key anatomical sequence. And then we use two functional sequences. Certainly that's within guidelines to use two, which is the diffusion weighted imaging and dynamic contrast enhanced MRI. Some people are trying to do biparametric MRI where you sacrifice the DCE, but in current guidelines, the PIRADS international guidelines, NICE guidelines in the UK, and consensus UK document from 2018, it should be multiparametric MRI with DCE. Brief anatomical overview. So the peripheral zone is a bit around the outside. That's where the majority of tumours occur. So around 70% of tumours will occur here. Then the transition zone in the mid portion of the gland here, That's where BPH occurs, the benign prostatic hypertrophy. So that's the sort of the overgrowth of the gland that leads to outflow obstruction as men get older, and you get these sort of lower urinary tract symptoms of hesitancy, poor stream, needing to go quite frequently, needing to go in the middle of the night. But tumors do also occur there in about 20 to 25% of cases. And then there's the central zone, which is this sort of darker area here that you can see up towards the base of the gland, the superior aspect of the gland. Now, that's slightly different tissue embryologically. It surrounds the ejaculatory ducts. These are the seminal vesicles. The ejaculatory ducts come off the seminal vesicles down to join the urethra in the midline, and that tissue surrounds those as it comes down. And that can be tricky because it looks a bit like tumor. It's lower signal intensity, it has mild restricted diffusion, it has mild enhancement of DCE. The key is the symmetry, the location, and this sort of appearance, this triangular type appearance on the coronal plane imaging. And of course, life's not simple, so you can get tumors in there. They're relatively rare, about 5% of tumors, but when they do occur, they tend to be higher grade, quite aggressive, and because they're right beside the seminal vesicles, typically early invasion and T3B disease, which has a poorer prognosis. So there's a concept of key sequences. So out of the three, which do we pick? Well, it depends on which part of the gland we're trying to assess. So when we're in the peripheral zone around the outside here, the normal appearance is this nice high T2 signal intensity, and tumors appear as low signal intensity. But actually, there's a lot of things that can mimic that low signal intensity that are benign conditions. So inflammatory conditions such as prostatitis, PIN, which is not a pre-malignant condition, previous hemorrhage can have that appearance, and scarring from previous infections as well. So actually what we rely on is the diffusion-weighted imaging, because most of those conditions don't have restricted diffusion, certainly not marked restricted diffusion. So when we're outside here, we use the diffusion-weighted imaging for interpretation. When we're in the center of the gland, this transition zone, it is very difficult. With all our sequences, it's difficult. But BPH nodules can be quite cellularly dense, so do show restricted diffusion, can also be very hypervascular. So it's actually the morphological anatomical T2 weighted imaging that we rely on in the transition zone. And the role of DCE, it is quite secondary. It really comes into its own in the post-treatment gland. So patients that have had previous prostatectomy, where we're concerned about this local recurrence, you can have scar tissue after surgery,